Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. I'm glad that we finally have a clear and clean Tuesday evening. It seems every year the weather gods always choose Tuesday as that particular evening to send down either heavy rain, snow, or sleet. Okay, we are still in Majjhima Nikaya number 10, the Satipatthana Sutta. And we are in the section on Dhammanupassana, that's the contemplation of phenomena. In the subsection on the five aggregates, this is on page 152, section 38. And everybody should have the chart on the five aggregates. I gave it out last time. We had a few more copies made in case there are any newcomers or anybody didn't bring it. And last time I went through and I explained each of the aggregates individually along with its characteristic, the contents, and I just mentioned the simile. And one impression that the kind of explanation that I gave last time, one impression that some people might get from that type of explanation, is that the aggregates take place on different occasions of experience. One might think, okay, that form, the body, is always present, but one might think sometimes there's a feeling, sometimes there's a perception, sometimes there's a volitional formation. But actually, this is not the case at all. But on every occasion of experience, all five aggregates are present. So whenever one sees any object, any form, hears any sound, smells anything, tastes any flavor, feels any touch sensation, thinks any thought, imagines anything with the imagination, on all of those different occasions, there are present all of these five aggregates. On one occasion or another, one or another of these three middle aggregates might be more prominent. The other two aggregates might be, their functions might be somewhat secondary. But the Buddhist texts, the suttas, show that the five aggregates are always bound up together inseparably. So one qualification that has to be made to this, though it's not of much practical relevance to us, in certain realms called the formless realms, the arupa dhatu, in those realms there is no form aggregate. Those are the realms reached through very high levels of meditation, through meditative samadhi. Through the power of that samadhi, the form aggregate is left behind and the consciousness just dwells together with the other three mental aggregates. But in ordinary, let's take ordinary human experience, we always have bodily form, that is our body. Then, based upon the body, some consciousness will arise through one or another of the sense faculties or it can be a purely internal state of consciousness. For example, when thinking about something, remembering, reflecting, judging. And in association with any of those types of consciousness, whether it be a sense consciousness or a mental consciousness, there will be some feeling, either pleasant feeling, painful feeling, neutral feeling. There will be some perception, that is, that mental function of knowing the particular quality or feature of the object. And there will be some, usually it's a bundle of different volitional formations, a whole flock of many different volitional formations regarding that object. And of those different many volitional formations, the most important is the one called volition, chetana. So let us say, for example, that I'm listening to some very, very beautiful music that's really uplifts the mind. In that occasion, the aggregate of feeling might be most prominent, because one is really blissing out on this ecstatic, rapturous over this very beautiful music. But in order to hear the music, there has to be perception. And even though volition here will be somewhat subordinate, but there will be some volition, at least the intention of continuing to go on and listen to the music. If one is, say, waiting for a friend to come at the corner, you're standing at the corner, you're expecting to meet a friend, you're looking down the street, constantly looking, different people are coming around the corner, and you're looking at each person as he comes around. On that occasion, the aggregate of perception might be prominent, because what you're doing is focusing in on each face, each figure as it comes around the corner, down the street, in order to determine if that is your friend. And yet there'll also be some feeling, maybe as when you focus in, when it turns out that it's not your friend, feeling of disappointment. When you see your friend, then the feeling of pleasure, happiness arises. And there'll also be some volition, that is the intention of planning to do something with your friend, or in this case, the intention of just standing and waiting and looking at each person. That requires volitional effort of its own. Okay, and suppose you have to build a house or complete some project, write a software program, teach a class, prepare for a class. On that occasion, what would be most prominent would be the aggregate of volitional formations, the force of will that drives the activity. But along with this force of will, there'll be some feeling, pleasant, painful, neutral, there'll be perception. And everything occurs within the field of consciousness. Consciousness is the awareness. I call it the light of awareness, which illuminates. It arises based on the sense faculty, and it illuminates all of the objective fields, making all types of all of the other mental functions possible. Okay, so now we are back into paragraph 38. And I've been explaining the passage that goes, here a bhikkhu monk understands such as material form. I haven't yet come to such its origin, such as disappearance, but just such as feeling, such as perception, such are the formations, such is consciousness. But now we come to origin and disappearance, to understand the arising and passing away of the five aggregates. And that takes us back to the table where we have the condition. Because there's two ways to understand origin and passing away. One of these we call the origin and passing away through conditions, and the other is called the origin and passing away simply through the characteristic of impermanence. To understand the origin and passing away through conditions, we have to investigate and to understand the conditions for the five aggregates, how each of the aggregates arises through certain conditions. Some of these conditions are common conditions to all five aggregates, and some are specific or particular prominent conditions for a particular aggregate. So, in the case of the aggregate of material form, the prominent condition, according to the suttas, is nutriment. This is in Pali, this is ahara. Yeah, the Buddhist texts actually mention four types of nutriment. They say that there are four kinds of nutriment or food for the support of living beings. What are these four kinds of nutriment? First is what is called solid food, material food. Literally in Pali it means food made into lumps or balls. This is the word that we had in the Chinese this morning. Chi la shi, twai, was it? Twai. Yeah. And this is what we normally mean by food, edible food. That is the food that supports the material body. But then there's contact, volitional, mental volition and consciousness. But here we're only concerned with material food as nutriment. So that is the support, the sustaining condition for the material body, for rupa, for the aggregate of form. Because as soon as the body is conceived, as soon as the, in the case of a human conception, as soon as the egg cell forms, immediately the process of nutrition begins. the egg cell begins consuming the nutritive substance that's provided by the cell and turning it into food and consuming it, burning it, expelling waste. And that process continues through the entire process of conception, right up through birth, and then from birth right up till death. It's only at death that the process of nutrition ceases. Okay. So nutriment is the strong supporting condition for the physical body. And when the body, when the mind becomes very subtle, especially through sustained mindfulness meditation, then right after one eats a meal, one could actually feel how, in the course of the digestive process, how the energy of the food is passing through the whole body and being burned up and turned into energy, which is flowing through the entire body. And now the commentaries give additional conditions for each of the aggregates. And in fact, the conditions they mention are the same for each of the five aggregates. These conditions are the conditions that bring these five aggregates into being in this existence. So the three conditions are ignorance and craving. That would be the ignorance and craving from the previous life. And it's through that ignorance and craving from a previous life that the stream of consciousness has come into this life and taken a particular form. And what has given a particular form to that stream of consciousness, that which has brought it into a particular direction, is karma. And so karma is a third condition for each of these five aggregates.
Is there a relationship between the karma and then the volitional formations in the aggregates?
It's a good question, but let me go through and finish, and then when I ask the questions, then please ask that. Okay, then feeling. The decisive condition for feeling, strong supporting condition for feeling, is something called contact. Now, what is contact? Contact is the coming together, the meeting of three things. It's the meeting of a sense object, sense faculty, and the corresponding type of consciousness. Or I would rephrase this and say, it's the meeting of consciousness with the object through the sense faculty. The sense faculty is a door. We call them dwara, the doors, through which contact goes, through which consciousness goes out to meet the six sense objects. We speak metaphorically even of the mental objects as being outside. Or we can say the six sense faculties are the doors through which the six sense objects come inside in order to meet the six types of consciousness. So when they meet, when The sense object comes through the door and meets with the consciousness. Then they're introduced and they shake hands. And when they shake hands, they touch, and that touching is contact. So contact. And when a contact takes place, then through that contact there arises a feeling, there arises perception, and there arises volitional formation. So these three aggregates all take contact as their strong supporting condition. And again, there are additional conditions according to the commentaries, but the commentaries here are actually basing on the suttas. The additional supporting conditions are ignorance, craving, and kama. Then the fifth aggregate is the aggregate of consciousness. And it's said that consciousness has as its condition nama-rupa, name and form. But what is name and form? Okay, form is the same as the form aggregate. And name, to put it simply, is the same as the other three mental aggregates, feeling, perception, volitional formations, together with contact. And the suttas also mention attention, which we could say is part of the volitional formations aggregate. Okay, and this is because consciousness depends upon a physical organism, the body, with its sense faculties. Without a body with physical sense faculties, consciousness cannot occur. Consciousness does not occur on its own out in the blue, except in the formless realms, but we're not concerned with them. And then consciousness always arises in association with feeling, perception, and volitional formations. One can never get consciousness on its own without any accompanying feeling, without some perception taking place, and without some act of volition occurring. So these three aggregates, these three mental aggregates that make up nama, always go along with consciousness. In one sutta in Samyutta Nikaya, it's Venerable Sariputta, I think, who compares consciousness and name and form to two stacks of straw, which are put up in such a way that the two are supporting one another. So, in order for the stack of straw on the left to stand upright, it has to be supported by the stack of straw on the right. And in order for the stack of straw on the right to stand upright, it has to be supported by the stack of straw on the left. So the two, we say consciousness and name and form, are anyamanya pachaya. That means they are supporting, mutually supporting conditions. Hu xiang yuan. Is that correct? Hu xiang chu chang. Chu chang. They strengthen each other and support each other. Chu chang. Chu chang, chu chang. And then where does this consciousness come from? It comes for a cause. There has been ignorance in the previous existence and craving for a new existence. That ignorance and craving combined have brought the stream of consciousness from the past life into the new life, and the particular mode in which consciousness arises, the particular form that it takes, the particular mode that it takes, particular direction that it takes, that is governed by karma. Okay, so these are the conditions for the arising of the five aggregates. And when these conditions cease, then the aggregates that depend upon them also cease. From a moment to moment, one could see that when a particular contact ceases, then the feeling, perception, volitional formations that depend upon that contact also cease. It's a little bit like when you have an electrical connection, then you might get, say, the sound coming through the radio. But if the plug comes out from the wall, then the sound will not come out of the radio. So as long as there is that particular contact, then you get the particular feeling, perception, volitional formations. If that contact ceases, then that feeling, perception, volitional formation ceases. With the case of bodily form, if it doesn't get nutriment, it doesn't get food, the body will get thinner and thinner and thinner till it will die. But actually at every moment, this is just in a general way, but at every moment the body is always consuming the food, and the particular cells that make up the body are always arising again and again as they get more food and perishing, replaced by new cells. And then consciousness itself, from moment to moment, is always arising and passing away in association with name and form, with all of the mental aggregates and the particular bodily structures that it depends on. And so this takes us into the, what I call the characteristic of impermanence aspect of arising and passing away. Here we go from the conditions. We're not observing arising and passing away through the conditions, but simply attending to the fact of the arising and passing, the bare arising and passing of bodily and mental phenomena. So here the monk is now, when he's understanding origin and disappearance, he is seeing how forms, material phenomena in the body, are constantly originating and passing away, vanishing. How feelings, perceptions, formations are constantly arising and passing away. How consciousness is constantly arising and passing away. And as the faculty, now this is within the context of developing or contemplating mental phenomena or phenomena as a satipatthana, a foundation of mindfulness. So as the mindfulness becomes more continuous, more sharply tuned, more finely tuned, then one becomes capable of discerning the arising and passing away at, I call it, subtler and subtler levels, finer levels, till one can see through continuous practice over a long period of time, the mindfulness builds up a momentum, a sharpness, a steadiness, so that one could perceive the arising and passing away many, many times, even within a second. Okay, so in this way, he dwells contemplating mind objects, or like, let's use the new translation, phenomena as phenomena internally, externally, and both internally and externally. Usually one would be contemplating one's own five aggregates, but from time to time one will be turning outwards and just reflecting temporarily on the fact that other beings too are made up of the same five aggregates. And then from time to time one goes, alternates quickly back and forth between oneself and others, also made up of these same five aggregates. Then one abides contemplating in mind in the phenomena, their nature of arising, their nature of vanishing, their nature of both arising and vanishing, or else mindfulness that there are phenomena is simply established in him to the extent necessary for bare knowledge and mindfulness, and he dwells independent, not clinging to anything in the world. That is how a monk abides, contemplating phenomena as phenomena in terms of the five aggregates affected by or subject to clinging. Okay, now I'll ask if there's any questions, and please, this gentleman, I'll ask you to repeat your question.
Yes, it was the relationship between conditional condition and volitional formation.
Okay, I'll repeat the question for the microphone. Okay, the question is, what is the relationship between karma as one of these additional conditions and the volitional formations? Aggregate. Is that correct? Okay. Okay, now, the most prominent component within the volitional formations aggregate is volition itself, chaitana, that mental factor called chaitana. And chaitana is volition, and volition is also the factor responsible for karma. So it is the volition that occurs through the in this volitional formations aggregate, particularly the volition on, you call it, I would call it the ethically decisive, ethically important types of volitions that constitute karma. And it is those karmas that become the conditions for the arising of the new sets of five aggregates in the future. Actually, these karmas can also bring their results within the present life itself. To some extent they will bring, or they can bring their results in the present life, but the major portion of each karma will be stored up within the stream of consciousness and will have that potential of bringing its results in future lives. And so then the karma will likely become determinants for the particular qualities of the five aggregates in future lives. Yes, Georgia.
I'm a little uncertain about consciousness as an aggregate. Mm. When consciousness is the thing that drives up onto the next life,
yeah.
It seems to me it's an aggregate that never goes away. Is that true, or are we talking about different modes of consciousness?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. Okay, just to repeat the question for the sake of the recorders. Okay. It seems, she says that she's a little uncertain about the nature of consciousness. It seems like consciousness is an aggregate that never goes away. Okay, now there's six classes of consciousness. Certainly, the five types of sensory consciousness, visual consciousness, hearing consciousness, nose consciousness, tasting consciousness, touching consciousness, are not the consciousnesses involved in the rebirth process, but it is a type of mind consciousness. And now the mind consciousness, it seems, has two aspects to it. One aspect is the active aspect, where its function is to process mental data, to think ideas, to form judgments, to imagine things, to project into the future, to remember the past. All of these are activities of the mental consciousness in its active mode of operation. But it is this mind consciousness. This mind consciousness also has a deeper stratum, which you might call this the connecting stratum of consciousness. I would say that this deeper stratum of the mind consciousness, I'm speaking somewhat metaphorically here, is the what preserves the impressions of all the experiences that we undergo, that preserves the karmic impressions of all of the actions that we perform. And this consciousness, it's always changing. It's not like a permanent soul. So it's always arising and passing with each moment of active consciousness. But what happens when death takes place, this is the way I would understand it, the active consciousness ceases operating and their functions come to an end, but the stream of consciousness still continues to flow, and it is now just that deep stratum, underlying stratum, you call it the subliminal consciousness, the quiet flow of the reservoir consciousness, which is just flowing on, arising and passing, and that is what flows on to a new mode of existence. But it's never, it always occurs in association with the other aggregates. It's not that we have this consciousness occurring without any feeling, perception, or volitions. But in that process of migration, or that process of transference or movement to the next existence, the feeling, perception, volitions are now functioning in a somewhat different way than an ordinary active consciousness. So it's a different let's say, a different mode of operation from ordinary active mind consciousness, but it is still a type of mind consciousness functioning in association with the other aggregates. And I should say, this is the way I interpret it. In the suttas themselves, the issue is not really dealt with elaborately in any kind of theoretical way. The only point that is made is that consciousness goes on from life to life, driven by ignorance, craving, and karma. And it's pretty much left at that level. Then the different Buddhist schools have used different theoretical models for trying to explain how consciousness moves on from life to life. Some have a teaching of an intermediate state in which consciousness is somewhat disembodied and functioning outside the five realms of existence. Others have a theory of instantaneous rebirth.
So basically, it's the active consciousness that is the aggregate.
They would all fall into the aggregate of consciousness, even that passive consciousness that is flowing on, governing the process of rebirth. It's still part of the aggregate of consciousness. It's just that its function is different from the function of the consciousness when it is in an active mode. But it still has to belong to the aggregate of consciousness.
I recall a sutta in Majjhima.
Yeah.
Where a bhikkhu expresses the opinion or the view that consciousness migrates from life to life, and the Buddha criticizes him severely.
The view that he advances is not that consciousness migrates from life to life, but it's the view that it is that same consciousness that migrates from life to life. And before the Buddha criticizes him, he asks him, "What do you mean by this?" And he says, if you want to check for yourself, it's sutta number 38. Page 350. The Buddha then says, when he says, "As I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, it is the same consciousness that wanders through the round of rebirths, not another." Then the Buddha says, "What is that consciousness?" And he says, "It is that which speaks and feels and experiences here and there the result of good and bad actions." In other words, the Buddha is getting this monk to identify implicitly, he's identifying consciousness here as the same consciousness, a consciousness that remains as the same entity without ever changing. And it is that entity that's responsible for all these actions. But it both acts and reaps the results of action. In other words, he's taking the consciousness to be an everlasting self or soul. So the Buddha will accept that consciousness goes on from life to life. I mean, there are many suttas which say that. But what he doesn't accept is that it is the same consciousness as a single entity that remains always the same and that has the characteristics of a self. Okay, I think we should go on to the next section now. Okay, now we come to the section on the six sense bases. We have the text. We're in paragraph 40. "Again, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu abides contemplating phenomena as phenomena in terms of the six internal and external sense bases. And how does he do so? Here, a bhikkhu understands the eye, he understands forms, and he understands the fetter that arises dependent on both, and he also understands how there comes to be the arising of the unarisen fetter, and how there comes to be the abandoning of the arisen fetter, and how there comes to be the future non-arising of the abandoned fetter. The same with the ear and sounds, the nose and odors, the tongue and flavors or tastes, the body and tangibles, tangible objects, the mind and mental phenomena. Again, he understands both, and he understands the fetter that arises dependent on both, and he also understands how there comes to be the arising of the unarisen fetter, how there comes to be the abandoning of the arisen fetter, and how there comes to be the future non-arising of the abandoned fetter. Okay, so now this introduces us to another very important scheme in Buddhism, or in the Buddhist philosophical teaching. This is the scheme of the six internal and external sense bases. And this scheme, we could say, it's complementary to the five aggregates. The five aggregates give us one perspective on experience. I sometimes say the five aggregates are a way of looking at experience. It's as if we were taking a, is it vertical or horizontal? The five aggregates is vertical. Five aggregates is horizontal. Then the six sense bases give us the vertical perspective. The two are complementary. But the six sense bases, it seems to me, are emphasized for a somewhat different purpose than the five aggregates. The five aggregates are emphasized in the Buddha's teaching on insight because the five aggregates are the main, I call it the main area in which views of self arise and become established. When views of self are formulated, they're usually formulated in terms of form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, or consciousness. And so the Buddha has collected all of these different ways of expressing views of self and established this scheme of the five aggregates. But now the scheme of the six sense bases is expounded, because one of the objectives of the Buddha's teaching is to overcome craving. The Buddha teaches that craving is the root cause or origin of suffering. This is in the formula for the Four Noble Truths. And where does craving arise? How does craving arise? The formula for dependent origination shows that craving arises through, in relation to the feeling, and feeling arises through contact that takes place at the six sense bases. So in order to overcome craving, one has to practice first restraint of the senses, and then to go even more deeply in overcoming craving, one has to develop insight into the actual nature of the six sense bases, their objects, and all the phenomena that arise through the six senses. There's a very nice little sutta that occurs in the Connected Discourses on the Six Sense Bases, the Salayatana Samyutta, the Buddha says, without directly and knowing the all, everything, it is impossible to eliminate, to overcome suffering. And what is that all? Without directly knowing, without fully understanding, which one cannot eliminate suffering. It is without directly knowing, without fully understanding, the I forms, I consciousness, I contact, and the feeling that arises through I contact. It is without directly knowing, without fully understanding, the ear, the nose, the tongue, the body, the mind, without directly knowing mental phenomena, mind consciousness, mind contact, and the feeling that arises through mind contact. But, the Buddha says, by directly knowing the all, by fully understanding the all, it is possible to abandon suffering. And then he says one has to directly know, fully understand the I forms, I consciousness, ear, nose, tongue, body, and so on. Okay, so one has to understand the I, understand forms. And that means to understand them by the way of insight, by paying mindful attention to them in the course of developing the foundations of mindfulness. When the mindfulness, when the samadhi concentration becomes very strong, then one can focus in finely on each of the sense faculties and contemplate the sense faculties almost at a microscopic level and see into the actual nature of the sense faculties, see their arising and passing away, their impermanence, their selfless nature, their unsatisfactory and selfless nature. And then the text mentions one understands the fetter that arises dependent on both the I and forms. The text doesn't specify what that fetter is. And then the commentary to the sutta brings in the scheme of the 10 fetters. But I don't think the commentary is right here to do that. Because there's a much simpler way to understand this based upon the suttas themselves. In another sutta in the Samyutta Nikaya, in a discussion, I think it's Venerable Sariputta and Mahakotita, the discussion, they speak about the question, is the I the fetter of forms, or are forms the fetter of the I? There are different opinions about this. And then Venerable Sariputta says it's not the case that the I is the fetter of forms, or the form is the fetter of the eye, but rather it is the chandaraga, that is the desire and lust, or in other words, it is the craving that arises dependent on both, that is the fetter in this case. Then he uses a very beautiful simile. He says, suppose we have a black bull and a white bull joined together by a yoke. Is the white bull the fetter for the black bull? Is the black bull the fetter or the yoke? Is the black bull the yoke? Is the black bull the fetter for the white bull? Is the white bull the fetter for the black bull? the answer in both cases is no. So what is the fetter between them? It's the yoke that joins them, the yoke resting on the neck of both. That's how you yoke together the two bulls in order to pull the cart. Nowadays we don't see bulls on the streets, maybe only on farms. But in Asia, even in the streets of Colombo, you see two oxen going down the streets with a heavy fetter on their necks. But I haven't seen a black one and a white one yoked together yet. Okay, so the simple way to explain what is the fetter here is to take it to be craving or desire and lust that joins together the eye and forms and that keeps them bound together. Another way is to explain a little more elaborate, to explain in terms, the fetter in terms of three types of feeling. Of course, through each of the senses there will arise pleasant feeling, painful feeling, and neutral feeling. So here I would refer to Sutta, well, I would go to page 1135. It's Sutta 148, paragraph, it's actually page 1134. It's Sutta number 148, paragraph 28. Depending on the eye and forms, eye consciousness arises. The meeting of the three is contact. With contact as condition, there arises a feeling felt as pleasant, painful, or neither painful nor pleasant. Okay. So we have these three feelings arise. When one is touched by a pleasant feeling, if one delights in it, welcomes it, and remains holding to it or clinging to it, then the underlying tendency to lust lies within one. That is, the fetter of craving or lustful desire arises. When one is touched by a painful feeling, if one sorrows, grieves and laments, weeps, beating one's breast and becomes distraught, then the underlying tendency to aversion lies within one. This is another fetter. This could be the fetter of ill will, aversion, or hatred that arises in response to painful feeling. Then when one is touched by a neutral feeling, that's a feeling that's neither painful nor pleasant, if one does not understand it as it really, if one does not understand as it really is, the origination, the disappearance, the gratification, that's the enjoyment in it, the danger or drawbacks in it, and the escape in regard to that feeling, that is, if one has blindness or ignorance about all the different aspects of that neutral feeling, then the underlying tendency to ignorance lies within one. Then the same thing is said regarding the ear, nose, tongue, body, and mind. And so the three types of feelings arise through the six senses. And then if one responds to these three feelings with craving towards the pleasant feelings, with aversion towards the painful, disagreeable feelings, and with dull ignorance towards the neutral feelings, those are the fetters in regard to the sense faculty and the sense object. And so then one understands how there comes to be the arising of the unarisen fetter. That is, by responding to these three feelings without mindfulness, without proper attention to them, then those three feelings, then those three types of unwholesome reactions naturally arise. They just arise spontaneously. Then how there comes to be the abandoning of the arisen fetter. We already had under the discussion of the hindrances how one overcomes temporarily the hindrance of sensual desire, the hindrance of ill will. But here I think something deeper is intended, because now we've gone past the abandoning of the five hindrances. Now how there comes to be the abandoning of the arisen fetters. So here I would understand we're actually in the stage of insight. And so the way to overcome these fetters when they arise is through developing insight into the real nature of the sense object and the sense faculty. An interesting sutta which sheds some light on this is the Mahasalayatanika Sutta. This is sutta number 149 in the Middle Length Discourses. It's on page 1137. I'll read from paragraph 3. When one does not know and see the I as it actually is, when one does not know and see forms as they actually are, when one does not know and see eye consciousness, eye contact, the feeling, pleasant, painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition, then one is inflamed by lust for the eye, for forms, for eye consciousness, for eye contact, and for the feeling, painful, pleasant, painful, or neutral, it arises with eye contact as condition. So in this case, it's simply saying that through ignorance, not understanding the sense faculties, sense objects as they really are, then no matter what feeling one experiences, then one becomes inflamed by lust or by attachment for that feeling, even for painful feeling, even for neutral feeling. And in that case, inflamed by lust, then one's craving increases, one's bodily and mental troubles increase, and one experiences bodily and mental suffering. The same is repeated for each of the other sense faculties. But then the sutta goes on in paragraph 9. When one knows and sees the I as it actually is, when one knows and sees forms as they actually are, when one knows and sees I consciousness as it actually is, when one knows and sees eye contact as it actually is, when one knows and sees as it actually is, the feeling felt as pleasant, painful, or neither painful nor pleasant, that arises with eye contact as condition. In other words, when one is gaining insight into the nature of this whole process of experiencing through all the six sense faculties, in this case the eye faculty, then one is not inflamed by lust for the eye, by lust for forms, for eye consciousness, for eye contact, for the feeling, pleasant, painful, or neutral, that arises with eye contact as condition. Then when one abides, not inflamed by lust, unfettered, without the fetters, uninfatuated, contemplating the danger, then the five aggregates are diminished for oneself in the future. One's craving is abandoned. One's bodily and mental troubles are abandoned. One's bodily and mental torments are abandoned. One's bodily and mental fevers are abandoned. And one experiences bodily and mental pleasure. Okay, so here, according to this sutta, the way to abandon the arisen fetters, the fetters that arise through the six sense bases, is through insight into the real nature of the six sense faculties, their objects, and so on. And that means to see them impermanent, dukkhas, bound up with suffering, anatta, not self, not mine, not I. Then when one develops this insight to the very depths, then the fetters are abandoned, cut off at the root, so that they cannot arise again in the future. And so the same pattern can be developed in regard to any of the six sense bases. And in this way, he dwells contemplating mental phenomena as mental phenomena. Okay. I'll ask now if there's any questions on this section. Yeah.
So, in the sutta, it says to understand the aggregates, understand the sense bases. I'm getting the feeling that word understands is not just, okay, you've explained it.
Definitely so.
I'm going to contemplate the concept of feeling and the concept of perception.
Yeah.
But rather just know it, see as it's described in this.
Yeah. The word here understands is pajanati, which is the verb that gives the noun panya, wisdom. It's often translated wisdom. And it means to understand through direct insight. Because now this is all developing as part of the practice of satipatthana, the development of the foundations of mindfulness or the establishments of mindfulness. And so it's when is now in the contemplation of phenomena, so it's now when it's reached the point where one has overcome the five hindrances and developed a sufficient level of samadhi so one could really penetrate into these matters very deeply with insight. So now this is using insight to observe. One first uses mindfulness to attend very, very closely to the sense faculties, or either the aggregates, the sense faculties, the different aspects of experience that arise through the sense faculties, and then that attending through mindfulness provides the base, the foundation for direct discernment with insight to arise. And then it's through that discernment with insight that one can see into the nature of these aggregates, sense faculties, to see them particularly as in terms of their characteristics, each of the aggregates in terms of its characteristics, and then to see their general, their specific characteristics, and then to see the general characteristics of impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, and non-self.
So the heading of this section that we're now translating as phenomena definitely refers to both physical and mental.
Yeah, Yeah.
Because I mean, when you look at it as mind objects, then it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I don't agree with that translation as mind objects.
Because then form wouldn't make sense, so it would have to be a concept.
Yeah, it's not the concept of form, it's form, yeah. Yeah, Venerable Sujit.
The paragraph of the five aggregates.
Yeah.
Here the truth is that such is material form, such is
yeah.
its origin, such is its appearance, yeah. etc., etc. And it's this to see the rising and passing away through the process of time.
I would understand it in that way, and also in terms of its condition, its conditions, their conditions. Yeah, to understand each aggregate, how it originates through particular conditions and passes away through with those conditions, with the passing of those conditions, and also to understand or to see, to discern on a moment-to-moment basis, each aggregate arising and passing, arising and passing.
Can you say this way? Through the flow of time,
yes.
arises and passes, it rises and passes, but in that, for example, in the to see in a static way. For the five aggregates to be there, there is these kinds of conditions. You mean that one of the conditions not being there,
yeah.
then it is like passing away, possession.
Yeah, though actually. The conditions for any of the aggregates are always there. But one could see, say, with how, with a particular contact, it seems for me contact is the easiest to see. Mm-hmm. How with a particular contact, a particular feeling, particular perception, particular volition arises. Then when that contact stops, then that feeling, that perception, that volition stopped. With form, it's a little difficult unless one tries stopping oneself. Because the body exists with the support of food or nutriment. And with consciousness and name and form are always present, and it's difficult to see the seizing of name and form in their entirety. But contacts, one could see, particular contacts, one could see stopping, breaking, and then with that break of the contact, one could see a feeling, perception, volition stop. Does that answer the question?
In your connected discourses of the Buddha, in your common, in your notes, you said that from Nikaya chapter 22, sutta 56 and 57, this is from a dichronic conditionality.
Yeah.
But it seems to me the other sutras like here, it is to synchronic.
Same time,
Diatonic means
at different times, Maybe if I said that, it seems not to be quite correct, because at one time of contact takes place, and with that contact, at the same time, there arises the feeling, perception, the volition.
That's from a synchronic perspective.
Yeah. What would be diachronic would be how, that means at different times, how ignorance and craving and karma condition the aggregates at a later time. But contact is, certainly is a condition for feeling, perception, volitions. I would say is synchronic at the same time. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check and see what I wrote there.
I don't understand very much about
I'll have. It's not a common word. Yeah. I'll have to check on that, then we can discuss later. I just want to get David had a question back.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask about consciousness. I imagine nirvana would not be a state of consciousness.
No, it's not. Nirvana is not a state of consciousness.
So I know we don't know what nirvana really is because we haven't attained it, but there would be, I guess, for it to be true that it wasn't a state of consciousness, there would be no remembrance of any time that we spent here.
No, let us put it this way. Nirvana in itself is not a state of consciousness, but the person who has attained the state of nirvana still has consciousness. So we could say a person, a nirvanized person, a person who has attained nirvana, is conscious, has consciousness.
And not just what Venerable was saying, if you look at dependent origination,
yeah.
That puts consciousness in a sequence.
Yeah.
So, does that clarify how it could be? I've never heard this word, diachronic.
Diachronic, yeah.
Diachronic. In that scheme, karma formations.
Yeah, in relation to karma formations, ignorance and karma formations, that has a diachronic relationship to consciousness. Actually, it's more complicated. It's very complicated. I don't want to get into that with 1 minute left to stop. I don't want to open that kettle of fish, as they say. I think we'll have to stop now with the sharing of the merits. Okay, we share the merits with the devas, the buddhas, and with all sentient beings, and also with the Nagas, asking them to rejoice in the merits. Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang Anumoditva Chirang Rakantu Sasanang Akasata Chabumata Deva Naga Mahitika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu desanang akasata chabumata deva naga mahitika Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu mang parang etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya sampadang Sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya etavata cha amhehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampati siddhya etavata cham hehi sampadang punya sampadang sabbe satanumodantu sabba sampati siddhya.